It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show. It's 5 minutes past 9 on this Thursday. It's the 14th of November and it's a misty old one across the Northwest. Still pretty dangerous if you're out there driving in certain parts. Hopefully that will clear at some point. But certainly a change in the weather compared to what we had, I suppose, for November up until now. That being said, we're here doing the normal stuff. There's no fog in the studio, thankfully, so I can see everything all right. And we've got lots to talk about over the next 3 hours. We want you involved in that conversation, by the way. It's been great speaking to so many listeners on air all this week, and hopefully that trend continues. If you want to have your say or raise an issue, you contact us via WhatsApp or text on 086 6025000, 086 6025000, or you give us a call on 07491 25000, or you can email comments at highlandradio.com. Now, if you're listening to the podcast, which is live on our website from 12:30, feel free to send us in an email if you want to be part of the conversation for the next day. We can read it out. Or as well, if you're listening overnight, many of you, thousands of you listen to the show overnight. So good morning to you guys there as well. If you want to watch the show on YouTube, on your Fire Stick, your smart TV at home, it's Highland Radio Ireland. You can take that app with you, of course. And we're also across Facebook. Just search Highland Radio. You'll see us there. Always useful, by the way, whether it's Facebook, YouTube or X. If you can give us a like or even a subscribe, that would be fantastic as well. Right. Let's have a look at the papers for this Thursday morning. We'll start with the Tyrconnell Tribune. The public in Milford have expressed fears that their source for public water from Loch Columbkill is facing collapse because of over-extraction by Uisce Éireann to serve outlying districts in Remelton, Fanad, Kerrykeel and Glenvar. Local farmers say the fall in water levels is the worst in living memory and there is something seriously wrong. Only recently a unit of the Donegal Fire Service was called to assist a horse who strayed into the loch in search of water due to the condition underfoot. It's reported that the horse was unable to get ashore without assistance. A major construction of a new treatment plant at Loch Column in 2010 was supposed to ensure a full water supply for Milford for the next 50 years. I'm also waiting. I think Loch Salt is a decent water supply. I don't know where the pipe extracts the waters from on it, but it's as low as I've ever seen it. It's just because it hasn't rained and because of the way we gather and store water in this country. That's why we run out of water so quickly, because we just hold it in massive bowls on the surface effectively. I just wonder when maybe conversations might turn to that water supply and others, I'm sure, across the county. The Derry People Donegal News tells us that a school principal has voiced fears that the lack of housing development in some areas of Donegal is putting the future of her own rural school and others in jeopardy as enrolment numbers decline. Ursula O'Connor is the principal of Stramore National School in Glendone. She told the Donegal News there are currently 69 pupils in her school roll, a drop of 17 pupils from this time last year. The decrease in pupil numbers will see the school lose a teacher next year. Just 4 children were enrolled into junior infants at Stramore National School in September, despite huge government investment in the school and a blossoming learning environment for pupils there. Are tangible fears for the longevity of the school. Dwindling pupil numbers at rural schools due to lack of housing was raised at a special plenary of Donegal County Council on Monday. So as I say, they say not exclusive to that school, but certainly a pressing problem. The Derry News, Simpson family feel empty following report findings. The PSNI not rigorous enough investigating Simpson death is the headline. Inside, the police ombudsman has concluded that the initial police investigation into the death of Kate Simpson was flawed and failed the Simpson family. Katie Simpson was driven partway to Elton Galvin Hospital on August the 3rd, 2020, by Jonathan Creswell, the man subsequently arrested and charged with her murder. En route to the hospital, Katie was transferred to an ambulance, and Creswell, who was driving Katie's car, told paramedics and the two police officers who had responded to a request for assistance from the NIAS that Katie had attempted to take her own life. There's an extensive report in that paper on that story today. On to the Nationals, and we'll go with the Independent first. And as you can imagine, election coverage is going to dominate the papers for this month. And just to let you know, by the way, that our plans are being put in place where you get to hear from the candidates. We will be doing a series of debates, not next week, but the week after. So we'll probably run them Monday through Thursday, and we hope to give everyone an opportunity to express why they believe they should, you should vote for they or them. So if you're interested in political debate amongst candidates seeking election, we've got your back. We're going to have, I think, probably three or four debates over the course of that week. It's actually the week leading up to the election. So if you're in any doubt, hopefully we'll help you make up your mind. So that's the week before the election, leading up to the election. And of course, we are already well advanced in our plans for election coverage. We will be broadcasting, of course, live with the team from the Ora Leisure Centre. You will not miss a thing. And we'll be broadcasting, of course, across the airwaves here on Highland Radio, but you'll also be able to watch it as well. And that's a really useful tool for people maybe who can't travel to the Ora Leisure Centre, who have an interest in politics but can't get access to it, or maybe used to go but can no longer go. We had thousands, I think at one point 6,000 or 7,000 people watching our local election coverage. So maybe there's someone in your family that would be interested in that, and you can help them if they're not able to do it themselves. Set up the YouTube app on their telly or a Fire Stick or whatever means, and they can sit and watch the coverage all day on the 30th of November. But anyway, back to the coverage in the papers of the election today. Taoiseach Micheál Martin has called for a ceasefire in general election classes between clashes between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael amid rising tensions between the coalition partners. Now, I understand where he's coming from, but I think the electorate are not silly. I mean, you guys are really, really clever. You know the story. Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have been in power together for a long time. They are obviously contesting the election now as two separate parties. But the probable outcome of that, although there are some indications that maybe tides could be turning in different directions, but the probable outcome of that is that they will coalesce again in government. So I don't think really people take the shots fired between the parties terribly seriously. I could be wrong on that, but I don't think they do. And that's not anti either party. I think it's just that I think the electorate's very, very clever and they see what's going on. Well, Mr. Martin said voters can see through Fine Gael's attacks on Fianna Fáil, which he said did not make sense, and also questioned why Taoiseach Simon Harris is not focusing similar levels of criticism on Sinn Féin. Maybe Simon Harris sees the Sinn Féin... Maybe he sees a better likelihood of capturing Fianna Fáil voters over Sinn Féin voters. I would suggest that's probably the case. Fine Gael seemed to be strategically deciding to target Fianna Fáil more than targeting Sinn Féin. That's the bit I don't get. And a lot of voters won't get that either, he told the Indo Daily podcast. The Fianna Fáil leader said the two parties are entitled to disagree and have different opinions, but he described the tone of the criticism from Fine Gael ministers as surprising. People before profit, I haven't mentioned them yet, and I'm trying to, over the course of the days, get around to as many of the parties as I possibly can in this part of the show. But they are offering something that you'd be some crack securing it here in Donegal. Many of us are employed in this industry here. I certainly couldn't get down to 4 days a week. I know lots of you work in schools. Maybe could work in schools, I don't know. But certainly hotels, restaurants, all that type of stuff. I can't see how 4 day working weeks would work in that environment. But anyway, maybe it is a good idea. Maybe it would happen. People for Profit have said it will introduce a 4 day working week, increase workers' holidays entitlement to 30 days, and add 2 extra bank holidays. The party is set to launch its election manifesto today, in which it will commit to abolishing the USC on income up to €100,000 and will not support a government that includes Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. In order to pay for the USC cut, the party would introduce a new multi-millionaires tax, which would be imposed on personal wealth over $4.7 million, and would raise $80 million next year, the party says. 4 day working week, 30 days annual leave, 2 extra bank holidays. I wouldn't be in work. I spend most of my time home at that rate. On to the Irish Times, and this is not surprising. Sinn Féin has spent 30,000, sorry, my eyes are not working well today, 91,000, sorry, on advertising with online platforms over the past 4 months on the general election, or as the general election loomed. More than the other political parties combined. Overall, the main political parties, including Sinn Féin, have spent a combined €162,000 on online advertising since August. Now, as I mentioned to Lee, we were in Loretto in Milford. Lovely to meet the teachers, lovely to meet the students. We were in Loretto in Milford yesterday as part of a careers day. I think just as I was talking to Lee there, it's about them deciding, you know, the career paths, what directions they might want to go. But it was interesting to get an opportunity to poll younger people in terms of the news that they consume and where they get their news. And the bottom line is that the majority of young people, principally the majority of younger people, so the new voters, maybe 16 to 23, 24, the absolute majority of them are on TikTok. And that's where Sinn Féin is spending most of their money. It was interesting, though, that a lot of the students talked of getting a lot of American politics and not as much Irish politics. But as I say, that will flush through now. And a lot of this money being spent enforcing the messages to these younger people will start to begin to take hold. But it was just really interesting. I mean, they use Facebook and others as well. But if you want to reach on social media, if you want to reach younger voters, there's no point spending a shilling on Facebook and to a great extent Instagram. It's other apps, including Snapchat and TikTok, because that's where they're getting their information. They're not listening to podcasts. They're not listening to the radio. They're not on Facebook. They're not on X for the most part. That's where they're getting their information. So that's where the wise money would be spent in reaching, you know, kids that young. Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram, and search giant Google, have online tools that offer information on political advertising, including expenditure. The spending on advertising on Meta platforms covers the period from October 10th to November 7th. Sinn Féin spent €78,300 with Meta during that time. Fianna Fáil has spent €14,100 with Meta and €50 on Google ads. Right, now on to the Daily Mail this morning. The government decision to not approve RTE's voluntary exit package has cost the national broadcaster several million, Director General Kevin Backhurst has told his staff. A controversy erupted at RTE last year after it emerged it had made secret payments to former Late Late Show host Ryan Tubridy. In the ensuing fallout, it emerged RTE was in a financially precarious position. After a number of reports and reviews by both the government and the broadcaster, it was agreed to bail out RTE to the tune of, swallow your tea there in case you haven't heard this figure, €750 million over a multi-year period. However, this came with strings attached to reform the organisation. One of the key commitments from RTE was that it would implement a series of redundancies in Montrose. But speaking at a town hall meeting yesterday, Kevin Backhurst told staff that the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform has still not signed off on its proposal. 750 mil. Lovely. On to the Irish Farmers Journal. Fianna Fáil has vowed to deliver a farm retirement scheme if re-elected to government, party leader Micheál Martin has said. It's one of a number of promises in the party's manifesto aimed at winning the farmer vote on the 29th of November. Speaking to the Irish Farmers Journal this week, he said the retirement scheme could be funded from the Exchequer and from the next cap. The party has also pledged to deliver €350 suckler cow and €35 for farmers if €35 per ewe for farmers if returned to power. On Tuesday, Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald told the IFA that any wealth tax her party would introduce if in government would not impact farmers. On to the red top tabloids now. And UFC star Conor McGregor has described Nikita Hann's allegation that he raped her in a Dublin hotel suite as lies and more lies, and insisted bruising on her body were not from him. Former hair colourist Ms. Hand is suing McGregor and James Lawrence for civil damages. Both men deny her claim of alleged assault in the Beacon Hotel in Sandyford on December 9th, 2018. Yesterday afternoon at the High Court, Mr. McGregor took to the stand to give evidence and said he and Ms. Hand had sex which was fully consensual in, well, I won't go into the detail here. Under cross-examination by Ms. Hand's barrister, John Gordon, he was shown photos of bruises on the complainant's body taken in the days after the alleged assault. And Mr. McGregor said the bruises possibly came from her diving into a bath. He claims it was nothing to do with him. That continues. On to the Irish Sun now, and this double tragedy in the sea in County Galway. More than 250 volunteers joined the search for a woman missing in Galway since she went for a swim. They helped rescue teams in the hunt along the shoreline of Galway Bay while several boats combed the water yesterday. The woman, who's in her early 30s and from Spittle in Galway, went missing after going for a dip in the sea at Silver Strand near Barna, about 7 kilometres west of Galway City on Tuesday. The alarm was raised initially after songwriter Johnny Dunham, a daily swimmer at Silver Strand, was reported missing when he failed to return to his home in Barna. Concerns were raised for the well-being of the woman when she did not arrive for work, and the search was upgraded when her car was located at Silver Strand. Mr. Dunham's body was found at lunchtime on Tuesday. The Limerick native, who lived in Barna, wrote songs for many, many artists. Galway Civil Defence set up a command and control unit at Silver Strand, and the search began at first light yesterday. But there is some question marks, and police say, Gardaí say, they're puzzled as to the sequence of events. It's obviously unusual. And in the United States, Donald Trump has appointed billionaire Elon Musk to his White House team as he surrounds himself with loyalists unlikely to question his motives. Well, they're unlikely to question his motives because they agree with him, so that doesn't surprise me. The president-elect made the controversial ex and Tesla boss leader of the Department of Government Efficiency, which will slash budgets. Trump also appointed other figures to key posts. It'll be very interesting to watch on there because Donald Trump has given Elon Musk and another guy over around 530 days to trim the fat over there in terms of bureaucracy, levels of bureaucracy, overspending, lack of accountability for spending and what have you. Elon Musk said on his platform yesterday, he says, I'll have it done far sooner than that. So it is actually going to be interesting to see what they do and what impact it might have on it. Right, okay. We'll be back with more in the 9 till noon show in just a couple of moments. The next issue we're going to talk about is one of those funny issues in that if you're waiting for a driving test or someone in your house is waiting for a driving test, it is one of the most important things that there is. If you're not, it kind of goes over your head, which is kind of understandable. But we have a real problem in this county in that there are thousands of people waiting to get on the road, be it students, people trying to get to and from work, people of all ages. But we only have 4 testers in the whole of Donegal. 3 are appointed to Letterkenny and 1 to Donegal Town. The driving test centre in Buncrana doesn't have a tester allocated to it. Tests are covered in Buncrana and Inishowen as a whole by presumably one of the staff from Letterkenny or from Donegal Town. But for the whole of this county, one of the most deadliest roads some of the most deadliest roads in the country, there are only 4 testers. Now, what has happened in recent weeks and what happened last week is at least 27 tests were cancelled at short notice out of the Letterkenny office. And if you're waiting, you're waiting a long time anyway. You might be just getting to your date and then to be told that your test is not going ahead. It's really a situation of the rug being pulled completely under you. But it has real impacts on people's lives. And Magella can join us now and sort of give us an insight into that. Hi, Magella.
Good morning, Greg.
What's the situation with your young fellow?
His test has been cancelled twice within the last 3 weeks, and he's been waiting on the list since January of this year.
Wow. At what notice was he given that the test was being cancelled on both occasions?
The first occasion he was notified the day before, and on this occasion 2 days before.
Right, so I know he's working, so I'm presuming he booked time off for the test.
Yeah, he had to book both days off work, so he's losing a day's wages. And he also has had a lesson booked for before the test and the use of the instructor's car for the test as well, both which had to be paid for.
Yeah. Okay. And any reason given as to why why they were cancelled?
No, on the messages it just said due to unforeseen circumstances, but no reason given.
Hmm. What impact is it having on him? Why is it so important he has a car?
For going to work, I mean, he's got a provisional licence, which means somebody has to sit on with him. Mm. If he's travelling by himself, which he can't if he's on a provisional licence. So if he had his full licence, it means he can go to work by himself. It means I have to get up most mornings at 6 o'clock and get my other 3 children up and take the whole lot to leave him at work, come back and get the other 3 out to school, and then he has to be picked up again in the evening.
So without those runs and that early start, getting the three out to school, then when they come home, getting the homework done, having picked them up, fed, and all that kind of stuff, that's tough enough. But with this extra work, you must be at the end of your tether, Magella.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. Like, even for my other three children, having to get them up so early in the morning, all into the car to leave him at work, and then the same in the evening, after they've all come in from school, they don't have much time to get their homework done until you have to go back and pick them up again from work.
Yeah, so he's been on the list since January, so that means he did his 12 lessons. You have to do your 12 lessons, then you get, then you have to wait until you're invited to apply for a lesson, for a test, and eventually that comes, you get your date, and he's just got right to the brink of that on two occasions and been cancelled. It puts a lot of pressure on him when he actually does get the test, I think, too.
Yeah, it does, yeah. He's all geared up to going for the test, and then next it's cancelled again, like, you know.
And what about the loss of earnings from work, too? I mean, obviously he's got an understanding employer, but, I mean, that's not his fault. That's out of his control. He's out of pocket on top of everything else.
Yeah, and then having to pay for the lesson beforehand and pay for the use of the instructor's car as well.
Yeah, exactly. You
mentioned
that.
As well as loss in wages, like.
Yeah, because they have to block out that period of time for when his test is due to take place. I mean, obviously, him having, and we hope he passes his test first time, it's a big deal for him, obviously, because he can get to and from work under his own steam. But it would be a great help to you by the sounds of things in the house as well, Magella.
Oh, definitely, yeah, yeah. It would be far less stressful and less running for me to do as well.
I mean, there's only four testers in Donegal. I imagine what happens is if someone's got annual leave or calls in sick or whatever it might be, and they're entitled to do that, of course, there doesn't seem to be a plan to cover those tests, so this could happen no end of times.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if it's happened to him twice in the last 3 weeks, there's obviously more that it's happening to as well. Like.
Mm. And each day there was, this is sort of separate, each day there was nine tests, I think, cancelled when one person was off. So if there's only four testers in the whole of Donegal, that means when they're working flat out, there's only 36 driving tests a day. It's going to take forever to get through the waiting list as it is, not to mention the cancellations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, OK. We're going to make our inquiries to see what the situation is. When does he think he might get a third date? How does that work?
He has to wait now for another message to log back into the RSA website to rebook another test.
Yeah.
It could take up 4 or 5 days for him to get the message now to rebook again, and it could be another couple of weeks before he gets called for another test, depending on what dates they have available.
Mm. Well, OK. It's not good. A lot of people in the same boat, Magella. Listen, as I say, we'll make some calls and see what the story is. Thanks for your time today.
No problem. Thank
all right,
you.
Then, and best wishes to him as well. I know we had this in our house. I know how frustrating it is in that situation. We were looking for a county breakdown on the amount of people that have applied, to register to vote in Donegal this month. I'm not really looking for a this month figure. I'm looking for the difference between this election and the election 5 years ago. But anyway, we'll pursue that. But 115,000 people across Ireland have applied to register to vote this month alone. There's no county-by-county breakdown, but it is a really strong figure. And we'll see if we can get that, because it's an important factor in our sort of predictions as to how things may go. A caller says, if you follow Trump's ideas on non-American citizens, it's the joke of the century. Nominating Elon Musk for a big job, yet the man is not an American citizen. So is he allowing those he likes to stay and those he doesn't have to be deported? Well, he didn't mention his wife. Elon Musk is a US citizen, as is his wife, but they're both immigrants. Is the, just the slight adjustment I'd make to your point there. Donald Trump would argue, if he were here, that he's not anti-immigration. He is just anti-illegal immigration or unchecked immigration. Right, Bridie's with me now on line two. Hi, Bridie.
Hi, Greg. How are you this morning?
I'm doing fantastic. Great to chat to you, Bridie. And you're in the lovely Nocala Drive in Buncrana. What's the story there?
The story there is we have no street lights since July.
Okay.
Now, it has been reported to our town council. It has been reported to the authorities. And I'm actually not the only one who has reported it. It's about 10 others. People have reported it.
Mm.
Now it's pitch dark now at the minute. It's all right in summertime, but there's no bother. But now at the minute, like, you can't see the footpath from the road.
So it's
and
really dangerous.
Last week we had a, it's very dangerous. Mm. And last week we had a bereavement here and it was like a nightmare. People didn't know where they were walking. One of our neighbours. So it has been reported, and I reported it to as well as our council representatives, and they said they were changing companies.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And yeah, they were changing companies and the red tape hadn't been sorted out. But that was 2 months ago.
Yeah, they took that company took over. That company took over. I'll get the name of it in a second. That company took over at the start of October, and they introduced a new telephone number. They introduced a new system where you could report the outages on a website. That's all been done, you're saying, and at this point,
yeah. But we haven't been informed that the new company had taken over, or we weren't informed about the new phone numbers or anything else.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I can give you the number. And I don't work for the council. If you want. In fact, I've got my Calla Drive opened and I'm actually reporting the lights being out as we speak.
Yeah, I'll get a pen. And another thing, now I was talking to somebody, now I don't know if this is 100% true or not, but the council still have to pay for each lamppost, even if they're not working, to the ESB.
Hmm. That sounds about right. If the I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I'd say that's true. Hmm. And so like, all the lights out, and are they all public lighting, Bridie? Are they?
Yeah, they're all public lighting. Top of the road, opposite my house, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lights out, 7.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to get them sorted. We have to get that sorted. So the Knockalla Drive, the lights, I'm going to report them missing out here, right? And yeah. The number for everyone in that area to bombard this, if you've a pen, is 0818.
Yeah,
0818 372
772 Now, I was just going around up our main street the other night and I just counted there's 8 lights out up there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another estate, the lights have been out since last year and I rode over to it. Like, I don't know what they're doing.
No, that's, I hope I haven't given you the wrong number there, because I hope that's the website's been updated.
Yeah, I hope so. Anyway, thanks for your time.
No, don't go anywhere. Scribble that number out.
I have it down.
Scribble it. It's wrong.
Oh, it's wrong?
It's wrong, yeah. Electric Skyline's taken over.
Oh, that's right. Who's taken over.
It is, yeah, sorry. And the number isn't. It'll cost you nothing to ring it. 1-800.
1-800.
150.
150.
150.
150.
Okay, and let us know how that conversation goes. I'm reporting them here on the website as we speak, and let's see if we can get these lights on.
I know,
because
it is very dangerous.
It is dangerous, you could go over on your heel, but as well as that, when there's extra traffic in an area following the sad local passing and there is a wake, it becomes far more sort of treacherous and serious as well, doesn't it?
And it is treacherous, and like we had a lady there had a big operation and she's now in a wheelchair at the minute, so she's not going to come out after dark.
No. And it just feels, it's about security as well.
And it's dangerous, yeah. It is dangerous.
Rightio, Bridie, give that number a ring. Report those. I'm reporting them online here. Other people in the area, 1-800 150 150. Report your lights out and we'll keep our eye on it and let's see how quickly we can get these lights back on again.
Yeah, and I will give the number to my neighbours.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
All right then, Bridie. I hope I've given you the right number now. I think I have. Anyway, I'll be back to you if I haven't.
Okay,
let us know if you get through. Bye-bye. All right, that is Bridie there. Yeah, because the contract ain't changed, but unfortunately the old number is still up on the council website. But I think that is the right number I have now. 1-800-150-150. All right, okay. Keep in touch with things like that. 086-6025000. We have to take a quick break. All right, it is Electric Skyline that now have the contract for the upkeep and repair of public lighting. So that's that second number, 1-800 150 150. If your lights are out, give them a call and give us some feedback on how promptly the response or the tone of the response, and we'll see what the crack is. Right, Martin McGowan is owner of McGowan Funeral Home Stranoller, and he joins us now because we want to talk about the cost of funerals. Good morning, Martin.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good, Martin. And I'm speaking to you off the back of statistics that show 8 out of 10 of us have not planned our funeral. And half of that 8 out of 10, 40% of us, have no intention of ever planning a funeral. So just before we start talking about the planning of a funeral, in your experience, is the first engagement you get most of the time after the fact, after a passing, or are we starting to plan our funerals in advance more, I wonder?
The majority would be after the event, that you would get the call. Some people, if they were in the hospice or seriously ill in the hospital, sometimes the family would ring you maybe a few days in advance, but mostly it's after the event. But people are getting slightly better at pre-planning funerals. Some have kind of a vague plan done. Some have very detailed plans done. Some have it prepaid also. So there's different options there for people depending on what suits them.
Yeah, and I would say too, whilst people may not plan out their funerals in detail before they pass, I would say quite a lot of people probably express preferences to loved ones, which are then related to you.
Yeah, the majority of the time that will be the case, that for some people it's a very taboo subject, they find it difficult to talk about, but over the course of their life they would give kind of hints and subtle say, like, to the loved ones about what their wishes are, and to express whether something as simple as whether they'd like to be buried or cremated and where, and they would go into some detail, but other people can go into, they would have the last detail organised down to songs being sung in the chapel and who does the reading. So it depends greatly on the individual and the family.
And I presume the majority of people still go for traditional burials. Are we seeing a steady increase in people opting for cremation?
Yeah, it's year on year. It's definitely, I don't know statistics, but I would find probably 15 to 20% are cremations. It's getting more popular. And as more people attend them, I suppose, and you feel you're in a controlled environment, you're in a warm environment, you're not exposed to the elements like you would be in a gravesite, and you have the freedom to choose your own songs and to have whoever you like speak at the cremation. So that's as people get more familiar with that, they tend to lean towards that, but it's getting more popular, but still the vast majority, but it's still burial.
I wonder what the motivation for the move towards cremation is, Martin. I wonder, is it a financial consideration? Some people don't want to be on a hill in a graveyard even after they pass, for that matter, or maybe they don't want to sort of just go down the traditional route. I don't know. Are you able to sort of give a motivation as to why cremation is growing in popularity? I know you talked of more control over the service and what have you, but more generally speaking, is there a particular driver towards that, do you think?
Well, it wouldn't necessarily be the cost, because it's slightly more expensive than a burial.
Really? That's interesting.
Because it's about 400 or 500 more, because I suppose you have two staff going to Cavan, which is about 5 hours. You have a hearse going that distance. You have the crematorium themselves are increasing prices year on year. So when it's all added up, it's about 400 or 500 more than what a burial would be.
There you go.
But probably some of the motivation, especially in the cities, would be the cost of the plots. Mm. I mean, around here, it's nominal enough. It's 200-300 euro for a plot. But in the cities, I've seen plots around Dublin, 5,000 and 6,000 and 7,000 for a plot.
Yeah, it's a lot of money, isn't it, for its use. And, it's important to someone, that's when, fine. But
yeah, even when you own the plot in those cities, there's a significant opening and closing fee for the grave as well. So just because you own it and paid for it doesn't mean it's going to be cheap thereafter, because you still have a significant fee for opening and closing graves.
Very interesting. Now, I mean, I think the traditional funeral here would involve you know, a removal, a wake, the service, the funeral, the flowers, you know, obviously maybe a priest or depending on your religion or what have you. Is there a sort of an average price your average funeral comes in at, Martin?
There is an average. Like, there's a lot of variables. I mean, you can get a funeral for say, just under 4,000, 3,750 or so, up to probably 4,750. That bracket would include most funerals. Now, you could spend 10,000 on a funeral. I've seen it happening as well when you start engaging with limousines and horse and carriage and stuff like that, and flowers. But most funerals is between, say, 3,800 and 4,800 would cover most.
The use of horse and carriages and what have you would be rare enough, wouldn't it, I imagine, Martin?
It would be rare, but it's getting more popular as well. But it can be quite nice, actually, because the environment of a funeral is generally you would hear a pin drop and then you'd hear the horses trotting down the street. It does add a nice touch to it, but I suppose there's some elements has maybe tainted that slightly over the last few years, especially in the cities and that. So unless a person was into horses all their life or something, it would be fitting.
Is there much of a difference in cost dependent on where you are in Donegal, for an example? I mean, is it cheaper in one part of Donegal or more expensive in another?
It would be... There wouldn't be much variation in it. Now, a lot of funeral directors are kind of very closed about costs, and that's fine. I mean, whatever works for people. But it's from what I would hear and what I would know, there's not much of a variation. But if you go further south, Sligo, for example, a funeral would easily be double what it would be here.
Wow.
Donegal would be the cheapest county in Ireland for a funeral.
There you go. I mean, and there's a lot of costs, isn't there? There's the coffin, there's your fee, flowers, getting the obituary on the radio or the newspapers. If you want music in church, often there's a marquee there for a wake. You could be employing a civil celebrant, depending on what the situation is. Obviously, you know, there'd be a donation to the priest or others that might take part in the funeral. So there's a lot there, isn't there, that sort of adds up to that, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 euro figure.
There is. Well, when you get an invoice for a funeral, generally it's broken down into three headings. So the first heading would be the coffin, and there'd be a detailed description on that, whether it's veneer, whether it's solid. So that would be one price. The second heading would be the professional fee, which includes the staff, the hearse, liaison with the family, the priest, the grave diggers, maybe hospital staff, the likes of Highland Radio for obituaries. So that professional fee covers that and the funeral director's time. So there's a lot of organising that goes into a funeral over the 3 days. And the final heading would be disbursements. So that's fees paid by the funeral director on behalf of the family. And that covers those headings that you just mentioned, like embalming, priest, radio, grave opening and closing, or crematorium, whatever the case may be.
And are we seeing any trends in the coffins that people choose? You know, there was a lot of conversation a few years ago about, you know, maybe biodegradable coffins, and then you see wicker coffins and what have you. Are they fads, or are they growing in popularity, or people still, if they're going for a burial, going for the what might be seen as the traditional coffin?
The vast majority is traditional coffin. Now, occasionally you would have a wicker or a willow coffin, but it's small, and maybe one out of every 10 would go that route. But the vast majority would be your traditional Irish coffin or Italian style coffin, which is quite similar in shape and all, but it's just, you know, maybe a high gloss finish or something like that. But the majority of them would be your standard happen.
And just in relation to cremation, I presume the family of the deceased are given the ashes in an urn or whatever reciprocal they choose. At that point then, it's up to the families. There's no record of what happens to those ashes or what have you. Do you know what I mean? We know where people might be buried and where you can... And I'm thinking maybe down the line and into the future, you know, maybe grandsons or daughters maybe want to visit the resting place of their loved one or what have you. There is no database or anything in relation to the disposal or dispersal of ashes, is there?
There's not. It's up to each individual what they do with their loved one's ashes. Some spread them at sea. Some could be in their... favorite football ground. I think the official line is that you're supposed to request permission of the local council before you do anything. But that's from my experience that rarely happens. People just do their own thing.
I think people too in more urban areas, and you see it in Britain an awful lot now, are being driven towards, you know, very, very simple funerals. You pass away, your remains are removed, you're cremated, and then the family is given the... I mean, you see these adverts all over British media at the moment. In a way, I suppose they're selling it as convenience and affordable and not leaving worries to those behind you. But I don't think that's the motivation. I think it's driven by you know, changes in life, but also, you know, the cost that would be incurred in burying someone in a city environment or an urban environment, for that matter. I don't know if it's a good thing or it's kind of a sad thing. I don't know if we'll ever arrive at that point, Martin.
It's sort of like a yellow pack service. Listen, you have to offer all services to people, and if they want a budget service, then you can do that. I mean, we can do a direct cremation, which is no wake, no funeral, just take the deceased from the hospice or the hospital or their home and direct a cabin and bring the ashes to the family a few days later. I mean, that service costs from about $2,750, so it's economically it's as reasonable as you could hope for. But those Sky channels, well up the channels at night, they're advertising that stuff fairly aggressively. But England's a totally different industry than what Ireland would be. Like, it's kind of a conveyor belt system over there. You have to wait 2 or 3 weeks to get your slot. It's very commercial.
And there's no way.
It's a lot warmer here. Yeah, a lot more personal.
I think so. Just a couple of people picking up on priest charges. Is that a donation? Is there like a standard donation, or is there actually a charge for the priest's time? And it might vary from parish to parish, but what's the situation there?
Generally, you would ask the priest what their fee would be. Now, you can dress it up as a donation or whatever, but then I suppose they have to live as well, and they're one of the more important people within a funeral, and people seem to overlook that. They have no bother paying $150 for somebody to sing, but then some people would begrudge the priest €100. But the cost of a priest would be between $100 and $150. Now, I have seen some parishes, they have a donation system which includes the priest, the altar servers, the sacristan and a choir. Now, that could be up on €250-300 per funeral.
A couple of questions. I only have time for two. Are you seeing an increase in professional photographers at funerals? Now, asks a caller.
I actually do photography as well, but I've done one funeral for a colleague of mine about 8 or 9 years ago. And as long as people understand you're there on behalf of the family and you're not just gatecrashing with a camera, then it's actually a very nice touch, and for families to look back on it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it depends on the nature of the death and the deceased as well. Very lastly, do you see many people donating bodies for medical research?
Very, very rare. I've been involved with two in the last 15 years or so, but
no, that is rare.
It's not common at all.
Right, Martin, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Martin McGowan, owner of McGowan's Funeral Home, Stranoller. Just a run-through of the cost of a funeral.